970 WGTK gives you Let's Talk with Dr. Stan Frager. From relationship problems to family feuds, he's got all the advice and expert help you'll need. Dr. Frager is here ready to lend an ear or a shoulder if you need it. Here's Dr. Stan Frager.
Hi, and welcome. Always nice to have you with us. Every Sunday night we get together from 8 until the 10 o'clock hour. I'm psychologist Dr. Stan Frager, and it's sure good to have you with us. We have an interesting couple hours ahead of us tonight, and I hope you'll stay with me. And let me just start off by telling you there are more than 500,000 children that are in our foster care system nationwide. And a lot of those children do very poorly in school. They typically lag behind other kids, both academically as well as socially. They're much more likely to have behavior and discipline problems. And their success rate, I'm afraid, for a lot of them is not that great after the foster care system. So let me tell you about an exception to that. And his name is Dr. Nathaniel Williams. In Dr. Williams' life journey has included being an orphan, a former foster child, a foster parent. He's a prophet, not for profit. Sometimes I'm not for profit, but I didn't plan it that way. It just worked out that way. He's a chief executive officer. He's an adjunct graduate school professor, university scholar, residence, motivational speaker, workshop facilitator, and the author of a wonderful book that I've had a chance to read that we're going to share with you tonight called The Navigator of Life. So, welcome, Dr. Williams. Nice to have you with us.
Dr. Frager, it's a pleasure to be here.
You've overcome a lot of adversity in your life.
Oh, to say the least.
A lot of adversity. And I know that some of the things you talk about we're going to share during this period of time are the three most difficult choices that a child faces when they grow up in foster care. We're going to learn the single trait that will make folks more effective decision makers, and that it's not just about education. Life experiences are very important, and you make that point so well in your book, by the way, and all three of those, and we'll talk about those and more, and it's just great. Would you talk to my Sunday night family? We get together every Sunday night to talk over things. So if you would share with my Sunday night family a little bit about how you came to write the book.
Sure. I've been a president of a child welfare agency for the last 16 years. And in working primarily with children, we have seen that some of their decision-making has somewhat to be desired, and they generally make decisions that we question. And I, through that frustration, wanted to do something positive, and so I decided that it's best to try to put this in pen to paper, and to try to come up with a model that we could build all of our programs around, and to give them some guidance that would serve them well while they're here, but also when they leave. So we started working on this in 1999, and then was able to bring it to fruition and publish it in 2007. So it's been I was looking the other day in our folder of what we submitted to the Library of Congress as our trademark, and it is so primitive and so very basic, and it's amazing how it's grown since that time. But it was a good moment to go back and to look at where it's grown from. But primarily, it was an effort to try to give the children and the young adults that we serve something that's in black and white, that would be an anchor. We run all of our programs around it. There's a house meeting each day where they talk about the navigator of life and some component of it. We have monthly meetings where they learn independent living skills, and we generally reward kids because they're able to share some aspect of the navigator of life in a real way that impacted their life. So it's an integral part of what we do.
Well, I know that has to make you feel terrific.
It does, because a lot of times when you develop something, you want to make sure it's useful. And the feedback that we've gotten so far is that it is useful.
And we're going to talk about if people have thought about being a foster parent, if you considered it, if you've had that experience, if you've been a foster child. We would love for you to call in. The lines are open, and very graciously, through Dr. Williams, he has offered to give a complimentary copy of this book. It's a $30 book, is actually $29.95. The Navigator of Life, wonderful book, and it'll be a complimentary copy for those who talk with us on the air. The phone number here in the 502 area code is 571-CHAT, 571-2428. 571-CHAT puts you right here. We know that talking about these things can not only be helpful to you, but it can be helpful to others as well. So we're going to talk about this foster care, like I said, during this first hour. And then the second hour is an open line, whatever folks would like to talk about, why that's what we'll do. So having talked about it, let's talk about some of the pieces. I think all of us face challenging situations, and you have done so well. I mean, you came from being a foster child, and it must have been. How is it you ended up being a foster child? Are you willing to talk about that?
Oh, sure, sure. My mother passed away from a cranial aneurysm when I was 5 years old.
As I recall, you were 11 children.
12 children.
12
children. Right. I have 11 siblings.
11 siblings. Okay.
And when my mother passed away, 10 of us were living with her, and 2 were living with their father. And so the 10 then went into the foster care system because there was no one that was able to take that number of children. And people really felt very uncomfortable breaking the family up, which eventually happened anyway by going into the foster care system.
Are you able to stay in touch with your other siblings, your other brothers and sisters?
It was really very much a major challenge. The size of the family, I think, presented a real dilemma to the New York City foster care system. To have 10 kids come in with a moment's notice is very difficult. So we were placed in different foster homes, and I would think that it probably took us about 6 or 7 years to begin to have contact with each other. All of us were placed with one other sibling, but having any contact with anyone that you were not living with was somewhat of a stretch. So, and then when we began, when I was like 11 or 12 to start having visits, we probably saw each other once every year, year and a half.
I know they got to be proud of you.
Oh, yes, and one of the sad thing is that some of them have passed on, and one at least is incarcerated, and so we run the gamut of where we are in our lives at this particular point, but definitely the ones in which are living and I have contact with, they're very excited, as I'm excited about the things that they've done with their lives as well.
And, you know, I think it's always interesting. I was a Los Angeles probation officer for 10 years, and it was interesting that in large families such as yours, sometimes you would see several of the children might end up in prison and do terrible things. And then the other child is a priest. And it's like, how did that happen?
Sure.
How is it you have a brother or sister who went to prison, and then you end up with a doctorate and a professor and CEO, and how do you account for that?
Well, I think that sometimes it's truly an issue of luck, and I think a lot of my fortune has to do with luck. When I look at some of my other brothers and sisters in their circumstance, I think that you definitely see intelligence in all of my siblings. Tenacity and commitment, but I think in some situations it went in a wrong direction. And I also think it depends a lot on the age. I think the younger the child was in our family, I think the better they were able to be as they got older. I think the individuals, my brothers and sisters who were older, I think generally had a tougher a challenge, because I think they knew exactly what was happening, as some of us that were a little younger did not know. So it's really hard to say exactly why everyone turned out the way they did. We do spend some time when we get together trying to figure that out, but I think that may be something we'll continue to keep trying to struggle with.
I know that you address some of the, what were the difficult choices you faced growing up in foster care? What were the tough ones?
Well, I think the biggest difficulty for me as truly being an orphan On my birth certificate, there is no father listed, which was an interesting thing, going on a cruise and presenting that as my identification, and them looking at each other like, this is the first time we've seen a birth certificate without the father listed.
That was one. I'll tell you what we do here is we're going to take a little bit of station business, and then I want to come back and hear some more. This is a gentleman who's overcome tremendous adversity in his life, written a wonderful book, and I want to hear your questions for him as well as sharing your own life. 571-CHAT, 571-2428.
ETK.
Hi, and welcome every Sunday night. This is our time from 8 to 10. Welcome to the Sunday Night Family. Talking with Dr. Nathaniel Williams, author of a great book, The Navigator of Life. If you have questions for Dr. Williams or like to make a comment, we have a complimentary copy of Dr. Williams' book, The Navigator of Life. And the book's going to help you. You don't have to be a foster child I think your book really addresses overcoming adversity. We're talking about the three biggest challenges, Dr. Williams, that you faced growing up. One is no listing of a dad on your birth certificate, not knowing who your dad is. It's got to be tough.
Sure. And a major part of, I think, especially for a boy, is being anchored by their relationship with their father. So not having anyone step into that role, and a majority of the people that I was around were females throughout my time in the foster care system.
And what were the other two biggest challenges?
Well, the other two biggest challenges is, I think, recognizing that around 11 or 12 years old, that I did come from a very big family, but I was in this world pretty much by myself. And so overcoming that was a major challenge. And it happened sitting on the stoop one day, and the executive director, a wonderful nun, stopped by and saw that I was a little sullen and took me downstairs and gave me a bicycle. And as I got that bicycle, I recognized that this is probably going to be the way the rest of my life is I have to sit there and wait for people to give me a handout, or I'm going to have to recognize I'm in this world by myself. And
How old were you at the time?
I think it was about 11 or 12 years old. And Sister Mary Patrick, I'll remember her forever, the sweetest lady in the world, and I'm sure she meant all well by giving me that. But it was that moment that woke me up, and I started doing something that I think really made a very big difference in my life. I started signing my name, Nathaniel J. Williams, Executive Director, which in the nonprofit...
At 11 years old.
11 years old.
I love it.
And so by the time that I was 27, I could actually sign that, and it was true. So I think that was really a very liberating thing. Just as I got older, as the third challenge was just recognizing, 18 was the cutoff age, and I had to go out on my own, and really preparing for that and recognizing that, you know, foster care had its challenges, but it was a place to call home, and that I would have to fend for myself truly was probably the third biggest challenge.
Interesting. Now, when you talk about challenges, what do you think your take on what people need to do when faced with challenges?
Well, one of the things that is in the book that I think it's really served me extremely well, and I think the people that I've shared it with, so I'll share it with your audience as well, is just recognizing there are some absolutes in life. And I think so often, whether we're talking about our 401k, whether we're talking about our relationship with a significant other, whether we're talking about our children, we have to remember these three absolutes. And the first absolute is that things will change and transition. When I do this in a visual situation, I show them a picture of me when I was 15, 16 years old, a full head of hair, about 60 pounds lighter, tight white jeans, smiling. If you see me now, I have no hair.
I'm looking at that picture. You have the same barber as General Anderson, who's a friend of mine, and General Ordiarno. Same barber, yeah.
There you go. So reality is that things do change and transition. We have to remember that. I think so often we tend to forget that. Secondly, is that we're going to have a reckoning and accountability for everything we do. I'm a big fan of a soda and Twinkie, and the accountability and reckoning for that as a choice is a challenge. The third area to be mindful of, third absolute, is that everything comes to an end and everything terminates. I think so often we begin life and begin challenges or begin our day, and we forget that things change and transition. There'll be accountability and reckoning, and things end and terminate. We, you know, a lot of our times with working with the kids in our group home, you know, when a good time is going on, it's so hard to bring them back down. And again, because of the tragedies and the trauma that they've experienced, when a good time gets going, for a lot of them, that moment is something they want to savor. But one of the things we try to work with them is that everything has to come to an end. Everything must terminate. Again, things will change and transition, and there'll be accountability and reckoning for the behaviors that we have. And that's good accountability and reckoning, as well as negative accountability and reckoning. So I think that those absolutes would serve people very well to begin dealing with, keeping those in mind. And I was just last week looking at my 401k, and it said in the last 6 months that I lost 10% of the money that was in that account.
Welcome to the club, Dr. Williams.
Thank you. But reality is, I have to remember, you know, not too long ago, I made 20%, I made 25%, I made 30%. So it's important that I remember, and that's what my accountant wants me to remember, is that this pendulum too will swing, and that things will change and transition. So don't be overreactive. You know, try to move your money into more conservative areas if you can, but don't be overreactive. And by pulling it out altogether, just recognizing that everything changes and transition. Nothing stays always low, and nothing stays always high.
Yeah, and right now it's going to be a matter of weathering the storm, and it's,
for sure.
And it's very interesting. I kid about my 401s at 201, and hasn't quite made it. But keeping it in perspective, I think, is very important. But it's very scary.
For sure.
It's a scary time. And you talk about some of the mistakes that people make when dealing with challenges. Obviously, one is overreacting. And so what are a couple of the others?
The other thing that ties in with that is another thing that I mentioned in the book is just recognizing how the world generally speaks to us. And whether we recognize it or like it or not, the world generally tries to shame us into doing stuff as opposed to empowering us. And I think we need to be just very mindful of how that information is coming to us. So a lot of times advertising, a lot of times you'll get a memo from your boss to you saying that, you know, the person who had your job before did blankety blank and you're not, and using comparison as a way to shame us into wanting to do better. So I think it's important just to recognize the language we use toward others and the language that's being used toward us, and whether or not it is attempting to shame us or to empower us. Because when we're shamed, we're either going to withdraw, we're going to avoid, we're going to attack ourselves, or we're going to attack others. As opposed to being empowered, we're going to be engaging, we're going to try to integrate and collaborate with other people, we're going to build community and build ourselves and family. So we want to be in a situation where empowerment is the rule of the day as opposed to shame. I do think that that's an important thing.
Yeah, you talk a lot about that in your book. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, at the same time, When we talk about facing challenges, we have people who are in just very low socioeconomic areas. They hear gunshots outside their door at night, especially on weekends. These are tremendous, horrendous challenges. What do you say to those young children who are faced with, hey, you just don't know what it's like, man?
Sure.
And you had to have heard that.
Yes, I have. And one of the things that has been helpful for me is recognizing this is a big world. And it's important not to say that this is a big country. We have to recognize this is a big world. And maybe in the world that we're in right now, things are not pretty good, but I think we have to do what we can to try to enlarge the view that people have, to understand that sometimes just a mile away, sometimes just a block away, sometimes 1,000 miles away, there may be some other options that are available. So I think it's important to increase the view that people have, to try to encourage them to look at some other options.
All right. Well, we're going to come back to that.
Sure.
I'm Dr. Stan Frager with Dr. Nathaniel Williams, talking about overcoming adversity, the navigator of life. 571-2428 puts you right here, and I have a wonderful copy of the book for you. Be right back. There we go. Okay, I'm psychologist Dr. Stan Frager, and we're with Dr. Nathaniel Williams, and we're talking about his book, The Navigator of Life. Wonderful book about overcoming adversity. Complimentary copy for those who call in tonight, thanks to Dr. Williams' generosity. Appreciate that, Dr. Williams.
My honor.
And I want to come back to overcoming that adversity, but first, let's go to the phones. Kevin, welcome. Nice to have you with us on Sunday night.
Thank you very much. Good evening to both of you.
Yes. You had a comment, please.
Yes, I did. I just wanted to congratulate Dr. Williams on his success, and just wanted to add on that the book was terrific. I had the opportunity to read it, and I've had experience Dr. Williams some of, on hand with some of his advice, and because of him, I furthered my education, and, pursuing my BA in management now, and just that I recommend for anyone who would need that that push to read that book, and it's a great book.
Kevin, what was the piece of advice that you feel helped you the most?
Well, from knowing him from personal experience, it's just that to gain knowledge, and that with education you can pursue anything in life, and that the part that really stuck to me was change, that we all going to have to go through a change, and that part, the transitioning part, was the ultimate one for me.
Yep. Well, I appreciate the call.
Thank you.
And we got to get you to turn your radio or computer down in the background there.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, a little bit of a delay. And I appreciate that. That willingness to deal with change sounds easy, very difficult to do.
Yes, it is. That it is.
What was the biggest change you had to make in your life?
Dr. Williams was such a great inspiration in my life, and going through the transitioning from teenage to adulthood, and dealing with the streets and getting interacting with the wrong crowd, and he was a great help with guiding me in the right direction, per se. And as I've gotten an adult and I read his book, like I said, that part, transitioning from a teenager to an adult, and knowing where to go and knowing that education was the key that could take you anywhere in life.
I agree 100% with that. The education opens up all the doors.
All the doors for you. And it took me to an adulthood, unfortunately, to learn that. If I would have known what I know now, I would be in his position now.
There you go. It's never too late.
No, it's not. And that's what he says. And that's why I'm getting my BA now as we speak.
Good for you.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate the call.
Thank you for having me. Take care.
502 area code 571 chat. 571-2428 puts you right here. And Dr. Williams, I know you gave him that advice, and I agree with you 100%. I've said it so many times. My children ad nauseum, I'm sure. They've heard me say it 1,000 times about education opens the doors of opportunity.
Yeah, it does. And one of the things that's important to do as you pursue education, especially as an adult, is to recognize education for a lot of organizations is a business, and you have to find that educational institution that works for you. And so often I think people find that the educational market is intimidating, but there are programs out there that are geared toward the circumstance that you're in, whether it's a community college, whether it's a trade school, whether it's an evening program, whether it's for credit, whether it's not for credit, but just to take the time to consider yourself a shopper, and I think you'd be amazed about what's out there.
But you point out that life experiences are very important.
Sure. Because I think they make you who you are, and you need to be able to go into any relationship, an educational relationship, a personal relationship, where people give you credit for the stuff that you have experienced and value that. So often I think it's almost like, not to pick on my former surrogate parents, the Catholic nuns, but when they go into the convent, they basically forget about the previous life that they had and move on to a new life and change their name. we don't want that for any other person that is not chosen to take that challenge on. It's important that we understand we have a beginning and we have a middle and where we currently are now, and we need to make sure that everyone respects that. Whether we've had good things or bad things, we need to be in an environment that's accepting of us and also is going to provoke us to go on to the next level.
Now, so often when you have young people who grow up, and it isn't just young people, when people grow up in surroundings that are mediocre, that are where the aspirations of all those around them are just to get a job working, serving tables or very blue collar jobs, not that those aren't important, but isn't it tempting to set your sights very low?
Yes, it is, because reality is the ability to disappoint yourself is somewhat limited when the sights when the sight is low. And I had a conversation with a dear friend recently, where what's on the horizon is very, very scary. And so what I've been encouraging that person to do is really just think about being on the other side and don't think so much about the steps that you have to go through to get there. And I know it sounds easier said than done, but I think reality is for a lot of us, thinking about it will stop us from doing it. So I think we need to position ourselves and begin with the end in sight and position ourselves by thinking about graduation and walking off the stage or thinking about that job that we want to have. But so often what we do, Dr. Frager, is we lead our life by our fears and not by our dreams. And so often I think we need to switch that because it makes a world of difference.
Great. I want to come back to that. We lead with our fears instead of our dreams. Got to turn that sucker around. Talking with Dr. Nathaniel Williams, I'm Dr. Stan Frager. We're here for you, 571-2428. Put you right here with us. Give me a call.
WGTK.
The nice part being, I haven't heard much from my Sunday night family. Dr. Williams, I think my Sunday night family must not have any challenges or problems.
I find that hard to believe.
But I do too, especially right now. We talked a little bit about your experience in foster care. How did you, were you able to get through all that? And
well,
what was your guide?
Well, really, as I said earlier, the guide was really depending on myself. I was not, blessed with people that were able to see me through my early years to my later years. So I was blessed with individuals who were on the train for short periods of time throughout my life, and that I think was a saving grace, but having a constant person throughout that wasn't there for me. But that wasn't a barrier, because as I said earlier, I made a commitment to myself when I was 11 or 12 to make the best of the circumstance and to not feel sorry for myself and to move on.
But one of the things that I found, again, in a very skewed population looking at kids who had 5 to 20 arrests, that a lot of it had to do with, you could have the best well-intended parents in the world, but that if the kids hung out with the wrong buddies, they were doomed to trouble.
Sure.
And it didn't matter how good those parents are. We had middle and upper class parents. We had parents who came from very wealthy situations, the families were in very, very upper class and wealthy situations. Their children hung out with some of the wrong crowd, and it just took them down.
And one of the things that we see in the work that we do, and we're working with a very similar population in our agency, Dr. Frager, is that the relationship, we think about our parents when we're very young, they're very shielding of people having contact with us. And sometimes when the babies are very small and someone kisses the baby, people get very uncomfortable about that. But as time goes on, that buffer zone is removed. And sometimes I think it's removed too far, where there is no buffer between good people and bad people. And I do see that as a theme that has permeated a fair amount of teenagers, is that their parents have removed very much involvement in who they're relating with, and they get into that struggle of their peers versus their parents. And because that started when they were 8 and 9 years old, by the time that they're 13 and 14 and 15 years old, their relationship is somewhat challenged and not as strong. as it could be. So I think that that's one factor, and there's a multitude of them, but definitely the relationship between children and their parents definitely goes through a transition, and I think it's one of those things that we don't talk about. It just happens, and I think it's important to put that on the table to say we understand this in absolute. Our relationship is going to change and transition. There'll be accountability and reckoning for how we have to deal with it, and that most likely, as a parent, there'll come a time when I'm my role ends and terminates, and we need to think about that and plan for that as well.
Now, but, did you say you have children, Dr. Williams?
Yes, I have 6 children, and one more expected in March.
Congratulations!
Thanks
that's a full house
for sure.
Now, are you able, as a parent, is it do as I say or do as I do?
It's really do as I do, and I really one of the things that was. So exciting and heartwarming to hear as a young man who grew up without a father. A couple of years ago, I had my 18-year-old son come to a function with our children in our group homes, and just to be there. And he said, "I'd like to get up and I'd like to say something." So we got up, and he said, "You know, for years I was very jealous of you kids and the amount of time that my father spent with you as opposed to the time he was able to spend with me. But I recognized that what he was doing was very important, and I understand that now. And my goal is, as I'm now 18, as he was 18 at the time, is to go off and try to be 10% of what my father is." And I just thought that that was just such a interesting.
That had to make you feel like you were walking on a cloud.
And especially so, Dr. Frager, because here is a person who had no reference of any strong amount of what a father was. But one of the things that I did was, when I turned 18 years old, my first job was working with individuals with mental retardation and cognitive disabilities and children. So I was placed in that role as being a surrogate father. And before, my oldest son was born 19 years ago. So when I was around 24, 25, I had a couple of years under my belt parenting other people's children and being trained on how to do that. And
so you got to practice on those other kids.
Correct. And I think that's what...
that's like grandparents, They get it wrong with their kids, but with the grandkids, they get it right the second time.
There you go. So I think it's important that when we have those deficits, we can overcome them, and I think it's really about a strategy. Someone asked me once, when it's all said and done, what do you want to be known for? I want to be known as a strategist, as a father, as a husband, as a CEO, and all the different functions that I have, that I have to develop a strategy. And that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing, because if I'm going to be effective in all those different roles, I really do have to have a plan. Someone once said that if you don't have a plan, you'll be always working for someone that does.
Mm.
And that, to me, was a little bit difficult.
That's eye-opening.
Yes.
Yeah, if you don't have a plan, you will always be working for someone who does.
And we tell that to our staff that work in our group homes. You know, if you come into your shift and you don't have a plan, trust me, those 6 kids do have one.
So they have another agenda.
Right, and you'll be off to the mall and doing other things that you may not supposed to be doing and spending money. And so it's important to always have a plan.
Yeah, that's good. I would have thought that you would have knocked yourself out to be a good dad.
Oh, yeah, and it's really very important. And one of the things recently, my wife and I were concerned with our... We had twins 2.5 years ago, a boy and a girl. And the boy, Taj, had some hearing issues, and so we had that addressed by some tubes that were placed in his ear, and he was able to hear. But then we recognized some other delays, and about 3 or 4 months ago found out that he has autism, and recognized that, yeah, we have all these wonderful things that are going on in our life, and here's another wonderful thing that we have to deal with, which is
but Taj, you can do it.
There's no question about
it. That's
it. We're very, very blessed, and even our challenges are truly blessings for us all.
You're a good man. Talking with author, entrepreneur, CEO, on and on, Professor Dr. Nathaniel Williams, about his book, The Navigator of Life. We have Lisa on the phone, who we'll be getting to in a moment, and a book for her as well as for you, 571-2428. I'm Dr. Stan Frager. Be right back. Every Sunday night family time, 8 to 10, and we're going to be sending a complimentary copy, The Navigator of Life by Dr. Nathaniel Williams, and he also has a wonderful website, thenavigatorforlife.com, and we'll put that up on our website, stanfrager.com, as well. and link it there. And Lisa, welcome. Nice to have you with us.
Well, thank you, Dr. Frager. And hello, Dr. Williams.
Hello, Lisa. Glad you could be with us tonight.
Oh, thank you. My question is, I have a 15-year-old son, and I hear you say, you know, you teach your children to live their life as you do. And I was wondering, do you have any tips to find, help him find his way? Because he's definitely very lost and doesn't want to, you know, do what he's supposed to do. And education is the furthest thing from his mind, no matter how many times I pound it into his head. It's frustrating. And I hear you say, you know, it was a matter of luck that, you know, how things happened for you. So, you know, do you have any tips to, you know, push that luck his way?
Well, Lisa, thank you so much for asking that question, and I hope this young man clearly understands how lucky he is to have a mother who's willing to go the extra mile to do whatever it takes to try to help him out. And sometimes we have to wait a couple of years for that recognition, but I want to offer that to you now if he hasn't done it already, because I think what you're doing this evening is truly wonderful. I think that, to try to answer your question of some tips that you may want to use, is I think so often as parents we think we are the only messenger. And that I would offer to you that I'd be more than glad to talk with your son on the telephone if you wanted to get that information to Dr. Frager. And I think it's so wonderful, Doc, that you call your show. This is your
my Sunday night family.
There you go. I think that is so wonderful that that's what you call them. But I think it's important for us to look at the messenger. I think sometimes we want to be the conduit and the person that carries the information to our children. And sometimes another person can help do that. And sometimes it's just that that contact and that reference that makes a difference. One of the other things that I would give you as another tip is allow your son to recognize there have been some challenges, but also I think the most important thing for him to do is just for him to forgive himself for how things have gone and really allow himself to begin anew and really start leading his life with his dreams. And so often for kids, they misunderstand and they label their fears, their dreams, and we have to spend some time with them trying to help them figure out what it really is their dream. I was talking to one young man, and he said his dream is to not be a failure, and that's not a dream. That's his fear.
Oh, wow.
That's the fear.
So I think it's so very important that because if we're able to put that in front of us, not our fears in front of us, our dreams in front of us, and then forgive ourselves for the stuff that we have done in the past and agree to walk differently and then have some people that are in fellowship with us to make that happen, I think people with that alignment, they're untouchable. So if I could be of any help, or anyone that you know that could just accentuate and lead the choir in support of the things that you've said, I would take advantage of...
And Dr. Williams is the guy who walks his talk. He did it.
Well, I appreciate that.
And you're going to enjoy the book. We'll be sending it to you.
Well, thank you very much.
As well, and thank you for being with us on our Sunday night get-together.
Good talking to both of you.
Talking to you, Lisa. Dr. Williams, it's been great having you with us.
It has been my honor. This has been truly outstanding. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
And thank you for doing this show. It seems to make a real difference in people's lives.
Well, we hope. We help each other. They help me as well, I got to tell you.
Wonderful.
One of the things I tell folks is that sharing the challenges they're facing, hopefully we can be of help to them, but it will help other people as well. And that, of course, is what you have done. And we try and do it on Sunday nights. But I thank you and heartily welcome and recommend your book, The Navigator of Life, Nathaniel Williams, and your website, thenavigatorforlife.com.
Dr. Frager, it's navigatoroflife.com.
Not Navigator of Life. Yeah, we don't want to screw that up. But we'll get it on our website, stanfrager.com. It'll be there, and there'll be a link to it. So
thank you so much.
Thenavigatoroflife.com, for sure. Dr. Williams, thank you so much. Blessings and lots of good luck for you and your work in the future.
Same to you. Thanks so much.
Take care. I'm Dr. Stan Frager. It's an open line now from 9 until the 10 o'clock hour. And folks, I'm here. What if I have a talk show and nobody to talk to? Call me. Be right back.